You're listening to The Big Interview, first broadcast on the 20th of December 2015 on Monocle 24.
I'm Tyler Brulé, and this is The Big Interview on Monocle 24, our one-on-one series where people with fascinating lives, enviable careers, and generally good gigs sit down and tell us how they gained experience, built a name for themselves, and see the landscape around them. My guest today is Jean-Claude Biver. Born in Luxembourg in 1949 and now resident in Switzerland, Biver is one of the most respected, outspoken, and wily characters not only in the world of watches, but also the luxury goods sector in general. Having learned about the industry along the valleys and mountain ridges of Switzerland, Biver is famous for being the turnaround master of not only the Blancpain and Omega brands, but more recently Hublot and now Tag Heuer. As the chef of the Swiss arm of Louis Vuitton's timepiece portfolio, Biver's latest move saw him join forces with Intel to launch Tag's first connected watch, an industry first for Switzerland. As this is the season of timepieces and luxury consumption around the world, Jean-Claude Biver joined us in our studios here in London on the day he also teamed up with Red Bull in a new Formula One partnership. Mr. Biver, I wanted to maybe start. We're sitting here at a very interesting time of year for your sector, particularly not just because we're talking about luxury, but we're talking about watches. Let's look a little bit over the horizon, but I mean, probably to do that, we have to look back a little bit. How has 2015 been for the sector? Because we've heard so many different stories. Everyone, of course, you know, talking about China. China's gone a little bit soft in the industry. You know, on the other side, everyone's talking about what's happened in Russia as well. What is the state of market when you look around?
I would say, despite the problems you mentioned, China, Russia, the problems in the Middle East, terrorism, despite all this, I believe the year is not finished. I believe we're going to end up the Swiss industry doing minus 3% compared to last year. And last year was an all-time record year. So if you do minus 3% on a record year, and minus 3% is still more than 2013, which means it's not so bad. But the problem is that people are worried that 2016 could be worse than 2015, but who knows, you know. And I'm still optimistic for 2016, and I believe 2016 can be equal to 2015, which means if that is happening, we are safe. Now, there's another problem. It's the change of generation. Every 25 years, you have the change of a generation. There's a new generation coming into power. The people that were 25 years ago, 10 years old. These people, they come on the market, but do they have the same culture? Do they dress the same? Do they love the same products? No. Do they have the same music? No. Do they eat the same food? I would even say here, no. So if we cannot interpret this new generation, if we cannot find out what this new generation wants, then we might have a problem. And why do I say that now? Because we have seen the Apple Watch. The Apple Watch is an incredible revolution. Even if Apple might say it's not so successful, I hear from right and left that they sold something like between 6 million and 10 million pieces. And they started to deliver the first watches in February. If that's true, they are the first watchmaker from the turnover point of view in the world, having never been a watchmaker. So this is a real revolution. And will the young generation, will they want a simple watch that they buy for, let's say, £600 that tells you hour and minute and a second hand and eventually a date? Or will they want, for the same price, a connected watch that connects them to all the information, to all their different applications? I say they will want, for the same price, a connected watch. And that can be a danger, of course, for the Swiss watch industry, for the base, the price range is going from £300 to maximum 1,000. This price segment can be hit very strongly by the connected watch. And that might be a problem.
I want to come back to Swissness in a moment. But when you look at this generational shift, have you seen it in the sector before? And I guess, do we have to look back to the quartz watches when they came from Japan? Was that really the same type of shift in a way?
It was not exactly the same type of shift, because the quartz watch was due to replace mechanical watch, which it did for 10 years. And then a mechanical watch came back. The connected watch is for the higher segment, not a replacement. It's an additional product. It's like in London, I see a lot of little Abarth 500, but the people who are driving it, who tells me that they don't have a Bentley or they don't have a Ferrari? You can have both. So you can have for London your little Abarth 500, mm-hmm. and you can have for another car your limo with a chauffeur. The two are complementary. The connected watch can be complementary. You wear it for business because you need all the informations. And tonight, you go for dinner, you put a classical or a beautiful collector's watch. Mm. So the two, that's the big difference.
What happened in Switzerland that we saw this clawback, that somehow the mechanical watch came back?
The mechanical watch came back because suddenly people realized that every watch had the same quartz movement. A quartz movement is a quartz movement, and whatever your brand is, you cannot make a quartz movement differently. It's like the connected watch. Whatever your brand is, how can the connected watch be different from an Apple? It's impossible, because there is one standard and that's it. In the mechanical watch, there you have all the particularities and you have all the identities of each and the DNA of each brand. So when people realized at the end, if I buy an expensive watch and I have a cheap movement inside, that doesn't work. It can work for a few years, but long term, it doesn't work. So people said, if you spend money, you should at least go for a brand where you have a brand identity in the movement. And the movement can only have an identity if the movement makes tic-tac, tic-tac, tic-tac. If the movement is a quartz movement, there's no identity, because a quartz movement is a battery. Mm. It's a quartz and a chip. And the quartz and the chip, they are always the same. You cannot make them differently.
So if we look at a future for a connected watch being one part of the industry, and then I think about Switzerland, and I think about all of the watch journals where people are obsessed with the TikTok and this extraordinary craftsmanship that when you go into these white rooms, and I'm always amazed watching these men and women working with these small screws and springs, thinking, I'm really surprised that they don't, you know, go and jump off a mountain at the end of the day, because it is so intricate. But then on the other side, you have this, you know, extraordinary technology, which is maybe a little bit commoditized. Where does Switzerland live in all of that? Because I was thinking, you know, very early on, you know, if Apple, Samsung, your partners on the watches that you're doing, you know, shouldn't they have been setting up some labs and some manufacturing in Switzerland as well, as opposed to also having to do things offshore? Because we still want to see things made in the Jura.
Yes, but a microprocessor. Why are most of the microprocessors made in Silicon Valley? Why does Silicon Valley exist? And why do we not have microprocessor companies in Boston or in Chicago or in New York? Why are they all in Santa Clara and in the valley, in Silicon Valley? So there's a concentration of know-how, there's a concentration of little startups, and all this makes it that this is the place for microprocessors. It's the same in Switzerland. Why do we not have a Swiss watch industry in Zurich? Would be more comfortable. Planes, airport, you know, communication. It's not there. It is in the valley, in the watch valley, as I call it. So that's the first thing. The second thing is to make a microprocessor. What has a microprocessor factory to do with a watch factory? Nothing. Nothing at all. Except even, no, they are no human being. They are robots, you know. So who is doing microprocessors? Maybe 6-7 companies in the world for phone, for telecommunication. And this is impossible to get them in Switzerland. The only thing you can get is what we try to do now with Intel, who is our partner, to have a technological transfer and to open a little assembly chain. But that's very small, but nevertheless, it's the start. But microprocessors, to build and to develop them in Switzerland is a pure illusion. Because, number one, we are so late. Because if we would start today, Intel invests $12 billion per year in R&D. How can we catch up when one guy spends $12 billion in R&D? So the microprocessor and software, that's the second. A connected watch works with two components. One is the soft and one is the microprocessor. The software is called today iOS, that's for Apple, and the rest of the world works on Android. How can we in Switzerland invent a new software just for our watches? It's a total illusion. So we have no other choice, I believe, than to make partnerships and to try, as we do it now, to have slowly, slowly some technical, technological transfers. But to think that one day you might have a Silicon Valley in Switzerland making microprocessors is an illusion. But Switzerland will remain for the art, a concentration of art and tradition and culture. And this is incredible now what I'm going to say. The more you sell connected watches, the more you promote the art. Because when the young kids who do not wear watches today, because they look on their phone what time it is, but they might buy a connected watch. Once somebody has been used to wear a computer on his wrist, it's easy 10 years later to sell him a piece of art for the wrist. And this will enhance the Swiss watchmaking art. We are producing art for your wrist. You can have art hanging in your dining room and you can have art on your wrist. And that's great. And this will be a promotion for the real high end of the Swiss watchmaking art.
When you look at the sector as it exists now, you're a first mover in Switzerland doing this connected watch, as you have. Does intelligence say that everyone else is also lining up quite quickly behind you? Are we going to see other big names outside of course, even the LV group, within a Swiss context, that is?
I want to be a leader.
I think our listeners got that.
You can only be a leader if you have followers. Because if you are alone, you are a lonely company. I want to be a leader, so I need followers. So I wish, I hope, many Swiss brands will understand the threat of the connected watch. Not copy me, but they will understand that there's a real threat. They will understand that there's a real need for certain consumer, and I hope they will do the same as we. And the more we have people competing with us, the more we will all sell at the end. If I'm alone, my sales potential is more limited than if we have five competitors, because we are five people to advertise, we have five people to promote. So it's always better. Competition helps everybody. It only not helps the weak one.
No, I mean, you're creating a sector.
Yes.
Absolutely. But what happened, just remind me, what happened in that Quartz moment? Because we didn't see the country banding together. Some Swiss companies did move to doing some Quartz, I recall.
Yes.
And with some success.
They all tried. From Patek to Rolex, they all had at a certain moment in the 80s a Quartz movement. And all, even Rolex. Today, I would say, in the auction, those Rolex in Quartz have a real value because they were not many, because they gave it up very quickly. Mm. They came at the end of the process and they realized that it's better to have a mechanical than Quartz. But everybody went into Quartz because at a certain moment, everybody believed that's the future.
So maybe we won't see a Swiss Android or we'll see a Swiss iOS, but could you see a banding together of all of the industries, maybe as you're saying, that there becomes a Swiss valet standard potentially as well? Maybe not for an operating system, but in terms of even, because who knows where the connected watch goes next?
Yeah, who knows where the connected goes next? The only people who can give you the answer are the people from Silicon Valley. You have to ask Google and Intel and Apple what is coming in 5 years, because they know what is coming in 5 years. We don't know it. I think that to have in Switzerland and to develop software or to develop a microprocessor that is similar to the ones that are needed to the connected watches of today is, for me, an illusion. Now, do we need a connected watch that tells you everything? Maybe not. There are many functions that we eventually don't need. So we could see a connected watch in different degrees of connection. Like we have a mechanical watch that is just hours and minutes. Then we have hour, minutes, date, and day, date. And then we have a chronograph, and then we have a perpetual calendar. So we might have a range of connected watch from the very simple one to the most complex one. And eventually, in that classification, a certain number could be made and developed totally in Switzerland. And when it comes to the absolutely most complicated, then it would be a Silicon Valley microprocessor. That can happen.
And what about a real hybrid in terms of real mechanics as well, merged?
That is, of course, the best idea intellectually.
Did you go, so looking at the watch on your wrist, did you actually explore that early on, saying, could we have a hybrid?
Yes. The hybrid is a question of power reserve. Does a mechanical watch store sufficient power to have the electronic part to give it enough to work? No, not for the moment. But with the progress that is coming, I could see one day that we can have a mechanical watch that stores sufficient power in order to enable to have additional functions. But when we have realized this, imagine, and it will be possible, I think, in 5 years, what will we have? We will have a mechanical watch. What is a mechanical watch? It's eternity in a box. And we will have technology. And what is technology? It's obsolete in a box. So in the same glass, you're going to have a Bordeaux Lafitte 86 and you put some water in it. And you say, this is hybrid drink. In a normal restaurant, you have one glass for your Lafitte and you have another glass for your water. You don't put the two in the same. And that is, for me, the problem of the hybrid. Because nobody understands that the mechanical watch is like Big Ben in London. It's eternal. Big Ben has celebrated 150 years. Can you believe that it's still working after 150 years? Your phone that you had 5 years ago doesn't work anymore. The TV of my grandmother doesn't work anymore. So the eternity in the box, that's the genius of the Swiss watchmaking art. And technology is obsolescence in a box. And that's totally different.
When you speak to your colleague, maybe is even your, I guess, your boss, Monsieur Arnault, is there a recognition that this is, when you talk about this eternity in a box, that this is also represents the entire sector that, of course, fuels the business every day, whether it's the wine business, whatever they're in, and this recognition that we still need to make things in Europe, and that we still need to, of course, ensure that there are enough people who want to travel up to Les Loc, to Les Chaux-de-Fonds every day and do this. And not just maybe in your group, but even within a European context, is there that recognition that craft is incredibly important and that, there's going to be continued value in this eternity in a box notion?
Of course. It's, a luxury brand is also eternity. If you see luxury brands, most of them, how old are they? You start from Aston Martin, you take Ferrari, Hermes, Vuitton. How old are these companies? They are all incredibly 150, 160 years old. They are somehow already eternal. How old are the young Silicon Valley companies? A few don't exist anymore. Where has Kodak gone? Where has Xerox gone? Where has Polaroid gone? Where is Nokia going? So we have the eternity in the classical, traditional, high-quality luxury brands. And in the technology brands, we already see many are disappearing, new ones are coming up. So the fact that we need in Europe to maintain our tradition, our art, our culture, that's obvious. And there will be always a market for that. The more we will have technology surrounded by us, the more we will need individuality, the more we will need something special, the more we will need eternity. Eternity is what we need. And that's all we need. And that's all we want. Everybody wants to be eternal somehow. Everybody wants to leave a trace before he dies. So the eternity is the 21st century. We will find again how important it is to get something eternal and not throw it away. We are in a throwaway society now. So I believe strongly that the future is in the eternity.
How much of a role is education and marketing then? Because if I look at sort of existing campaigns within your group elsewhere, of course, we hear a lot about generation. A couple of companies do talk about legacy when we're in the luxury goods space. But when you look at a new generation, do you think they get there? As you said, maybe you can get them in a decade's time to transfer from having a connected watch to something which is more complex. But how do you take them on that journey, do you think?
Yeah, the education is education is everything. And education, as we all know, is a long process. It's a continuity. It's a constant. And whoever, whatever your age is, you need to be educated to understand. Education makes you understand music. Education makes you understand art. Education, you are nobody in this world if you're not educated. This is why I always say, the only way to fight against poverty is to educate people, because education makes people free, because they can find a job and they can make money and they can get out of their status and or from the slum. If you give money, they just spend money. If you give education, that's forever. You never lose it. So education is really the answer. And how do we, as a luxury group, how do we educate? But that's we have stores. Each time you enter into a store, it's like entering a museum. You get education because somebody's going to tell you a story. We have the promotion. We have the advertisement. We have the mouth to ear. Education is a very, very, very long process. And we cannot think that we can sell luxury items without educating people. That's an illusion.
I mean, you mentioned the store and you said it's like walking into a museum. Now, a lot of people would say, well, isn't this the whole problem as well, that retail has become like a museum? A lot of people don't want to walk into these stores on Bond Street and on Madison Avenue and in Ginza and Tokyo anymore. And some people will argue otherwise and they will say, no, we're going to build vast temples to retail and we're going to make them exciting. And in fact, we want to make them like a modern museum. I mean, for you, how much of it, I mean, are people really going to be spending big money? And do you think there's a certain limit as to what people will spend on a watch online versus still wanting the box, the bag, the white gloves when they go into a shop?
I think more and more people will get used to buy it on the internet.
Do you see a ceiling for price right now that someone says, ah, okay, 3,000 euros, okay, maybe that's as much as I'll spend. Otherwise, then they want something else.
No, I think, yes, of course, for the moment, there's a price limit. Because there's a trust limit. Will you trust somebody on internet who is going to sell you a $50,000 watch? Is it a fake? Is it a second hand? Is the quality, is it working? So it's a problem. But if, to say something, you would buy it from a jeweler from here, from Bond Street, Watches of Switzerland as an example, then it's different. Because Watches of Switzerland has a reputation. It's a name. They are in Regent Street. They are in Bond Street. Then you can eventually complain. You can eventually get...
You can find them.
You can find them. So you see, when all these jewelers will start to sell on internet, slowly, slowly, I believe in 10 years, we will be able to sell $1 million watch on internet, provided the source where it comes from is authentic, has credibility, and you can get in touch with it. So the best people to sell on internet are people who have a store. Because the store gives the visibility. If you buy from a company on internet, you don't know where they are. Where are they located, you know? But if there's a store in Regent Street, you feel comfortable because you go then and then you can go to the store and complain and say, I bought it on internet here. Voilà. So I think internet, e-commerce, it's clearly the future also for luxury.
You're on the road constantly. When you look around the world at contemporary brands, who do you respect? Not just in the luxury space. Who do you look at as a company? Automotive, airlines, hotels, dairy companies, aside from, of course, the own cheese that you make, who do you like? Who do you respect?
I respect and admire enormously the brand Ferrari. Why? Because every boy in every slum of the world has a Ferrari cap or wears a Ferrari shirt. And it's for me a mystery. How can such an exclusive brand that sells 5,000 cars or 6,000 per year, how can they be so well known all over the places? I mean, it's incredible. And how can they preserve their prestige when in every slum you have Ferrari caps? So for me, Ferrari is the example. And how have they done it? How have they achieved it? And for me, that's a mystery. And it has helped me. It has helped me in the beginning when Hublot entered football. Everybody said to me, this is very popular and it will harm your brand if everybody in the stadium knows your... I said, but it didn't harm Ferrari that every boy in the slum had a Ferrari t-shirt. It will not harm me if everybody in the stadium knows my brand. And that's it. It didn't harm. On the contrary, it helped Hublot to achieve an enormous awareness going into football. And then we went into the rap music. And everybody said to me, rap music, they're going to kill your brand, the prestige. Mm. Because rap music is not prestigious. I said, come on. You have ideas of prestige that are from the last century. Prestige today is different than prestige was in the last century. And prestige on the 20th century was different than prestige on the 19th. Every century has its own definition of what is prestigious. So the brand probably I admire the most for what they have achieved is the Ferrari.
And finally, as we look across 2016, when you look at markets around the world, where are you most encouraged by when you look at a next generation consumer segment, emerging economy, economies that are reinventing themselves? Who's on their way back or who's on the way up?
I'm amazed by Japan. Whew. Japan is, you know, Tokyo is the city to be today for the young people. The young generation, they have eyes on Tokyo. We, when I was young in the 60s, we had eyes on America. And now the whole world looks at Tokyo. And Japan is an amazing country. And Japan is the country of fusion. Because at every moment you see the past. And at the same second, you see the future. They have constantly past and future, yin and yang. I mean, Japan is incredible. So Japan is, for me, probably the country that will show us the way in fashion, in design, in technology, and even in art. And everybody's eating now Japanese food. I mean, Japan has done an incredible job in the last 20 years. Nobody has really noticed, but suddenly they are here, and Japan has become a leader.
Jean-Claude Biver, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Joyeux Noël.
Merci, joyeux Noël aussi.
And you've been listening to The Big Interview with me, Tyler Brulé, in conversation with Jean-Claude Biver. The Big Interview is produced and edited by Bill Luthi and researched by Gaia Lutz. Until next time, all that's left to say is goodbye, and thank you very much for listening.